हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौभुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करभावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगराधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. Sorry. Okay, so now Arjuna, you know, trying to pacify Krishna, is explaining all his glories and his incarnations and how he's established the eternal city of Dwarka, how envy, untruth, malice, and cruelty are not within him. And he is always the well-wishing friend of all creatures, right? So then Arjuna continues, Narada has told me that at the end of the yuga, all things, mobile and immobile, will enter your body. O Krishna, there is no limit to your glories. I have spoken of only a minute part. As he spoke, Arjuna felt himself becoming overpowered by transcendental ecstasy. His voice choked up and he was unable to continue. Pleased and pacified by Arjuna's expression of love, Krishna said, You are mine and I am yours. All that is mine is yours. He who hates you also hates me. And he who follows you also follows me. Formerly, you were Nara and I was Narayana. Though individuals, we are as one. No one can understand our oneness and difference. So Nara Narayana, that's why you see they're the lords of the Bhagavatam, because the Bhagavatam is very clearly delineating Achintya Bheda Bheda Tantra. And so naturally the deity is Narayan Rishi, who is the Supreme Lord and this devotee, but they're coming together as one incarnation. So they are the same because they're both, you know, the transcendental aspect, but there's a difference because Arjuna is the energy and Krishna is the energetic. So the energy and energetic are one and they're different. Like the generator, what's the meaning of a generator if there's no electricity? But electricity doesn't exist unless there's a generator. So they go together. So they're non-different at the same time as you can tell the difference. And they're always different. Draupadi, her beauty enhanced by her soft deerskin clothes, came forward with folded palms and said to Krishna. Right, so it means that the deerskins, they've been tanned, so then tanning, then they get the softness, so then you can properly wear them. Otherwise, they'd be too stiff; they wouldn't work properly. See, the aspect of deer skins: one is that they'll be pure; the other thing is that they nicely block wind; they keep you warm; they're rainproof, you know, because of the hair and everything like that. And you know, you don't have to wash them like that. So, but you know, now and again you can wash them, or you can put them out in the sun to, you know, to get purified. She came forward with folded palms and said to Krishna, O repressible one, all the great rishis have described you as the Supreme Person. The entire universe exists in you, and you are the refuge of all ascetics and sages. Even as children sport with their toys, so do you sport with the celestials. Those seeking your protection are never overcome by calamity. Right? So you can see where she's going with this. O slayer of demons, how is it then that one like me, the wife of the Pandavas, the sister of Dhrishtadyumna, and your friend, have been so insulted by the Kauravas? Right? Because he's controlling everything, and he protects everyone and sees that everything goes properly, and he's shown how he's going to destroy them all for all their bad behavior, the Kauravas. What she's saying is that, so she doesn't understand, because she's a devotee. She's the wife of the Pandavas, who are so dear to him. She's the sister of Dhrishtadyumna, who is there in Dwarka, and we see Dhrishtadyumna came with Krishna, personally. And she's also a friend of Krishna's. And so he's wondering, how is this possible? Draupadi's dark eyes filled with tears as she spoke. Subhadra also wept as she stood with her arm around Draupadi's shoulder, right? So they're both there together, right? Because they're They're called wives, so they're sisters. As she recalled the dice game, Draupadi became angry. Why, Krishna, did my five powerful husbands sit silently while I was humiliated by wicked men of no importance? Fie upon Bhima's arms and Arjuna's celebrated Gandiva, for they could not protect a woman in distress, not even their own wife. Fie upon Bhishma and Dhritarashtra. Although I am their daughter-in-law, they were prepared to see me a slave. Draupadi hid her face with her hands, which resembled lotus buds. Her shoulders shook as she wept. Regaining her composure after a few moments, she took a deep breath and concluded, O Krishna, you are my only shelter. I deserve your protection for four reasons, due to our family relationship, our friendship, the respect you bear for me, and the fact that you are my Lord. Right, so it hasn't shaken her faith. That's the important point here. She's just wondering why this would have happened, because they're, you know, he's her deity, he's the friend, they also have a family relationship, and all these things like this. And so she's a cousin sister, because the Pandavas are cousins, so she's a cousin sister. And so she's just, how is this happening, you know, because of our relationship. But it's not like some, oh, how has God let this happen? Bad things are happening to me. I'm being so religious. I'm worshiping, so I give up my worship. She's not talking like that. She's not faithless. She's just wondering, how is it possible? Krishna replied, Fair lady, you will see the wives of those with whom you are angry weep as you now weep when their husbands lie dead on the battlefield. Right, so it'll be even more severe. She's been insulted and she's crying now like this, but they'll end up with their husbands being dead. You know, their husband, everything will be destroyed. Like what was being, there won't be any Kauravas left. Do not grieve. I shall do for the Pandavas whatever lies within my power. You shall be the queen of kings. I speak the truth. The heavens may fall and the Himalayas move. The earth may be rent and the ocean dried up. But know for certain, O Draupadi, that my words will never prove false. Right? Because these other things are impossible. Right? Himalayas don't move. You know, they get up and decide, hey, let's go check out, South India or something. I heard it's pleasant and warm down there. You know, they don't do that. They don't just get up and move. So none of these things will happen. So they're saying that these won't happen. Even if that does happen, my words will be true. So you see his great personality, like Krishna says that, Arjuna says that, and they keep their word. Draupadi was solaced by Krishna's words. She did not doubt that he acted only for her ultimate welfare. The princess glanced across at Arjuna, who said, O doe-eyed lady, do not weep. What Krishna has said will come to pass. It cannot be otherwise. So at least there's some balance there, some justice is there. But the point is Krishna's arranging all that, you know, to take care of his devotees. Standing by his sister's side, Drishtadyumna declared, I shall slay Drona. Our brother Shikhandi will kill Bhishma. Bhima will kill Duryodhana, and Arjuna will kill Karna, who offered you such unbearable offense in the Shabha. Dear sister, with Rama's and Krishna's assistance, even Indra cannot conquer us. What then can be said of Dhritarashtra's sons? Right, if the demigods are conquered by them, how will Dhritarashtra's sons like that, you know, be, you know, they're much inferior. All present now again turned again towards Krishna. Looking at Yudhishthira, Krishna said, Lord of the earth, had I not been otherwise engaged at the time, I would have personally come to prevent the gambling match. By pointing out the evils associated with gambling, I would have gained the support of Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, and Bahlika, right? Because they're the senior persons. Right? Bhishma and, Bahlika, they're the oldest there. Drona and Kripa then are the senior Brahmas. Between us, we would have surely have swayed the blind king from his crooked purpose. The Brahmins present gathered around to hear Krishna speak, and he glanced at them with affection. Illicit sex, gambling, hunting, and intoxication are the four evils which beset men and deprive them of their prosperity. Gambling is particularly marked by the destruction of property, by misfortune, and by the squandering of wealth. It leads only to harsh words and enmity. right? Because there's this thing that you could gain so much or you lose so much. And when you do, then you get angry, you say so many things. All that work that you've done to get the wealth is gone in a moment. It's just, there's nothing good about it. Krishna said he would have pointed this out to Dhritarashtra, and if the king did not listen, he would have used force to bring him to his senses. And if anyone had supported the king in his ignorance, I would have destroyed them all. All this would have surely have taken place. O king, if I had not been away from Dwarka at the time, it was only upon my return that Satyaki informed me of the events in Hastinapur. Immediately upon receiving the news, I came here. My heart is pained to see you now, overtaken by calamity and sunk into misfortune. Yudhishthira asked Krishna where he had been during the gambling match. Krishna explained that he had gone to do battle with a king named Salva, a friend of Shishupal, right? Because when he was away before, and then when he went back, Salva was making this whole scene there, and so then he was out battling with him. When Salva heard that Krishna had killed Shishupal, he went to Dwarka and attacked the city while Krishna was in Indraprastha. Salva owned a great airship that resembled a flying city. He had received this wonderful airship as a gift from Shiva. In battle, he used it as a base from which to attack his foes. Raining down weapons of every kind, he had challenged Krishna, not realizing he was absent from Dwarka. After wreaking havoc in Dwarka, he had returned to his own city. Right, so he had come there to fight Krishna, and he came there and challenged Krishna, but Krishna wasn't there. Still, he made some trouble. Because having high ground is always an advantage. That's why you have castles, and they have these high walls, the outer walls. The inner walls don't need to be so big. Houses might be smaller, but the outer walls, because then your warriors are up high, and they can shoot arrows down like that. So shooting down is easier to protect yourself. Shooting up is much harder. And so then if you have a flying city, then it's even easier to do things like that. So it was, you know, very advantageous. Because Yudhishthira was interested, Krishna described in detail the fight that had taken place between Salva and Dwarka's warriors. He then told the Pandava how, after returning to Dwarka and hearing of Salva's attack, he had gone personally to fight him. A terrible battle ensued. Salva had acquired great mystic power through performing asceticism. And so that's the thing, is people do ascetics and do the yoga to get mystic powers. And then it's just for their material purposes. But the point is because it's material, it will always give some trouble. Make trouble, give trouble, and all that. While he was fighting with Krishna, he created an illusion and seemingly killed Krishna's father, Vasudeva, right on the battlefield. By his mystic power, Salva also sent showers of arrows, clubs, winged darts, lances, thunderbolts, bullets, rockets, swords, axes, and other weapons down upon Krishna and his forces. In the end, Krishna killed Salva and destroyed his airship with the Sudarshan Chakra. Right, so the whole point of all these things in Krishna and his pastimes is the particular rasa that's tasted there. And so this will be the vira rasa, or the chivalrous rasa. And so there has to be some kind of form of battle and greatness of the enemy. But Krishna will always, you know, triumph. How will it go any other way? But there's a taste in this. Yeah, it mentioned here, winged darts. You know, like we have the little darts we throw at the boards for things. So that means they're big darts that you throw, but they have little wings on them, so they're steady and they go very nice and straight. So they're short. They're not like a javelin, which is very long. It's just by some length, it'll steady itself. Krishna concluded his narration. That is why, Yudhishthira, I was unable to come to Hastinapur. The dice match took place just after I had slain Salva and was engaged in restoring Dwarka back to its former condition. If I had come, Duryodhana would not now be alive and the gambling match would never have taken place. What can I do now? It is difficult to stem the tide when the dam is broken. Krishna stood up to leave, saying he could do nothing for the Pandavas until the end of the 13 years. He knew that Yudhishthira and his brothers were too virtuous to break their word, right? Because they were saying that, you know, we'll go march there and defeat them and install Yudhishthira. But Yudhishthira had said, no, I've taken this vow, right? So Krishna knew this. He knew that Yudhishthira and his brothers were too virtuous to break their word. They would doubtlessly remain in the forest for the full period. Krishna therefore told him that he would return to see them at the end of their exile. If Duryodhana did not return the kingdom, he said, then he knew there would be a battle in which the Kaurava and his followers would be annihilated. The Pandavas bade Krishna and his party farewell, and Arjuna especially bade an affectionate goodbye to Subhadra and their young son Abhimanyu. Closely followed by Dhrishtadyumna and the other monarchs, Krishna left the forest on his golden chariot, which shone like the sun. As the thunderous sound of the chariot's wheels died away into the distance, Yudhishthira ordered his brothers to make ready for their own departure. He wanted to enter more deeply into the Kamyaka forest and find a suitable place where they might spend their exile. Right, so they want to find some place that's nice. Now they're just in the forest, but if they go into more distance, then they can find either a nice river or lake, and that it has open, it has fruit trees, it has everything nice, and ideally also places where sages live and everything like that. Still accompanied by hundreds of Brahmins, the brothers made their way into the forest. After some time, they came to a great lake called Dvaitavan. Swans, chakravakas, and other graceful birds swam in its waters. And the lake edges were crowded with red, blue, and white lotuses, which were so fragrant that the air was heavy with their perfume. Numerous fruit trees loaded with golden fruits grew all around the lake. Peacocks, chakoras, cuckoos, and other birds, all singing beautiful songs, played in the trees. The brothers also saw many siddhas and charanas sporting in the woods, so it means it's a nice, auspicious place. And on the lakeshore, and numberless rishis sitting motionless at the water's edge, their mind fixed on the Supreme Brahman. Yudhishthira was delighted. The area was beautiful. They would live there. The brothers rested beneath a large banyan tree, looking like five great elephants sitting by the side of a mountain. Domya then performed sacred rituals to sanctify the place where they would build their cottages, and then they began construction. Living in that forest, the Pandavas resembled a number of Indras amid the celestials. Right, so they're like Indras, and then all these rishis that are there are like the celestials. They served the rishis and Brahmins by offering them excellent fruits and roots. Domya and the other priests would perform daily sacrificial rites in honor of the gods and the Pandavas' ancestors. They thought constantly of Krishna and passed their time hearing the Brahmins recite Vedic texts. Okay, so then it's perfect. In the mornings and evenings, they would do the rituals and all that. So Domya is there, the other sages are there, they can do things together, do nice all the different yajnas and rituals. And then during the day, they would hear the recitation, the morning and evening, about the Vedas and all the different stories and histories and things to be learned like that. And they would do service to the Brahmins by going and collecting and all that, because the Brahmins are meditating, so the Pandavas can go out during the day, they can collect so many nice things. Soon after their arrival in Dvaitavan, the ageless Rishi Markandeya visited them. It was said that Markandeya had lived since the dawn of creation and knew of everything that had occurred in the history of the universe. He greeted the Pandavas with affection and accepted their worship. The Rishi, whose body was effulgent with spiritual light, and who appeared to be a youth of 16, smiled to see them. Right? He looks like he's 16, but he's as old as the universe. Like that, he goes, he's one of the oldest sages. That's what's very special about him. They reminded him of Ram and Lakshman, who had been exiled to the forest hundreds of thousands of years previously. The sage had also visited them. Since arriving in the forest, Yudhishthira's grief at what he had caused was beginning to engulf him, right? Because he got involved in this. He could have been more, because he was simply going on the principle of following the authority, which is a good thing to do. And that, but at the same time, is then you have to also see the character of the authority. It means you always be respectful to the authority, but if what they're asking you to do is not of value, it's not supported by the scriptures, then it's not that important. But of course, as Kshatriyas, there's a challenge and all that. But this is not an actual challenge where it would be like Duryodhana challenges Yudhishthira to a fight. And so, but in this fight, Yudhishthira will be tied up hands and legs and that, and so he can't even move. And Duryodhana will be free and he'll have a club. But that's not equal. So that's not actually a challenge that needs to be accepted. So that's what he's starting to see now. But he had taken a vow before because he heard that there would be destruction of the dynasty due to in-house fighting. So he was trying to follow the authorities nicely so that this won't happen. Seeing Markandeya smiling, he asked, "O illustrious one, all these ascetics here are sorry to see our plight. How is it that you alone smile with delight?" "I am not delighted, my child. Rather, I am amazed at how much your situation resembles the life of Dasarath's son Rama. He too suffered due to his unfailing truthfulness," right? Because he followed the order. "He too lived in the forest, exiled for some years. I remember seeing him thousands of years ago wandering Maushrishi Muki with his bow. Like you, Rama was high-souled and innocent, and like you, he lived in the forest, out of filial obedience to his father." Right? So just Duryodhana, Dhritarashtra is like the father. "This is why I smile. No matter how powerful we may be, we cannot avoid calamities brought by destiny." Right? So even the Supreme Lord spent time in the forest. "No one, therefore, should ever act unrighteously, thinking I am powerful." Right? So Duryodhana is doing that. It'll be his destruction. But for Yudhishthira, you see all these great personalities come. Markandeya then assured Yudhishthira that, like Ram, he too would be regain his kingdom from the Kauravas when his period of exile was over. After promising to come again while they were in the forest, he headed to the north. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.